This harkened back uncomfortably to earlier beliefs that some modern races, such as the African Bushmen, properly the Kalahari San, and Australian Aborigines, were more primitive than others. Whatever Kuhn may personally have felt, the implication for many people was that some races are inherently more advanced, and that some humans could essentially constitute different species. The view, so instinctively offensive now, was widely popularized in many respectable places until fairly recent times. I have before me a popular book published by Time Life Publications in 1961 called The Epic of Man, based on a series of articles in Life magazine. In it, you can find such comments as, Rhodesian man lived as recently as 25,000 years ago and may have been an ancestor of the African Negroes. His brain size was close to that of Homo sapiens. In other words, black Africans were recently descended from creatures that were only close to Homo sapiens. Thorne emphatically, and I believe sincerely, dismisses the idea that his theory is in any measure racist and accounts for the uniformity of human evolution by suggesting that there was a lot of movement back and forth between cultures and religions. There's no reason to suppose that people only went in one direction, he says. People were moving all over the place, and where they met, they almost certainly shared genetic material through interbreeding. New arrivals didn't replace the indigenous populations, they joined them, they became them. He likens the situation to when explorers like Cook or Magellan encountered remote peoples for the first time. They weren't meetings of different species, but of the same species with some physical differences. What you actually see in the fossil record, Thorne insists, is a smooth, continuous transition. There's a famous skull from Petralona in Greece, dating from about 300,000 years ago, that has been a matter of contention among traditionalists because it seems in some ways Homo erectus, but in other ways Homo sapiens. Well, what we say is that this is just what you would expect to find in species that were evolving rather than being displaced. One thing that would help to resolve matters would be evidence of interbreeding, but that is not at all easy to prove or disprove from fossils. In 1999, archaeologists in Portugal found a skeleton of a child about 4 years old that died 24,500 years ago. The skeleton was modern overall, but with certain archaic, possibly Neanderthal characteristics, unusually sturdy leg bones, teeth bearing a distinctive shoveling pattern, and, though not everyone agrees on it, an indentation at the back of the skull called a supraniac fossa, a feature exclusive to Neanderthals. Eric Trinkaus of Washington University in St. Louis, the leading authority on Neanderthals, announced the child to be a hybrid, proof that modern humans and Neanderthals interbred. Others, however, were troubled that the Neanderthal and modern features weren't more blended. As one critic put it, if you look at a mule, you don't have the front end looking like a donkey and the back end looking like a horse. Ian Tattersall declared it to be nothing more than a chunky modern child. He accepts that there may well have been some hanky-panky between Neanderthals and moderns, but doesn't believe it could have resulted in reproductively successful offspring. I don't know of any two organisms from any realm of biology that are that different and still in the same species, he says. One possibility is that Neanderthals and Cro-Magnons had different numbers of chromosomes, a complication that commonly arises when species that are close but not quite identical conjoin. In the equine world, for example, horses have 64 chromosomes and donkeys 62. Mate the two and you get an offspring with a reproductively useless number of chromosomes, 63. You have, in short, a sterile mule. With the fossil record so unhelpful, scientists have turned increasingly to genetic studies, in particular the part known as mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA was only discovered in 1964, but by the 1980s, some ingenious souls at the University of California at Berkeley had realized that it has two features that lend it a particular convenience as a kind of molecular clock. It is passed on only through the female line, so it doesn't become scrambled with paternal DNA with each new generation, and it mutates about 20 times faster than normal nuclear DNA, making it easier to detect and follow genetic patterns over time. By tracking the rates of mutation, they could work out the genetic history and relationships of whole groups of people. In 1987, the Berkeley team, led by the late Alan Wilson, did an analysis of mitochondrial DNA from 147 individuals and declared that the rise of anatomically modern humans occurred in Africa within the last 140,000 years, and that all present-day humans are descended from that population. It was a serious blow to the multi-regionalists. But then people began to look a little more closely at the data. One of the most extraordinary points, almost too extraordinary to credit really, was that the Africans used in the study were actually African Americans, whose genes had obviously been subjected to considerable mediation in the past few hundred years. Doubts also soon emerged about the assumed rates of mutations. By 1992, the study was largely discredited. But the techniques of genetic analysis continued to be refined, and in 1997, scientists from the University of Munich managed to extract and analyze some DNA from the arm bone of the original Neanderthal man, and this time the evidence stood up. The Munich study found that the Neanderthal DNA was unlike any DNA found on Earth now, strongly indicating that there was no genetic connection between Neanderthals and modern humans. Now this really was a blow to multi-regionalism. Then in late 2000, Nature and other publications reported on a Swedish study of the mitochondrial DNA of 53 people, which suggested that all modern humans emerged from Africa within the past 100,000 years and came from a breeding stock of no more than 10,000 individuals. Soon afterward, Eric Lander, director of the Whitehead Institute, Massachusetts Institute of Technology Center for Genome Research, announced that modern Europeans, and perhaps people farther afield, are descended from no more than a few hundred Africans who left their homeland